Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics in Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. This week on the podcast, I sat down with Chris Adey, who is one half of Left Wing Cody. He also has a radio show on Kiss FM. However, in the recent year, he has just taken on a role at Spinning Records as A&R of the UK dance sector of the record label. I wanted to get Chris on because I'm really interested in getting industry insight to people that work behind the scenes of the industry, also that have the like artist side of it where they're also still full-time artists and can like really give some knowledge on both sides. I really enjoyed this conversation. Chris is a lovely guy. I've known him for a fairly long time, and this is the first time I've like really had like a proper industry talk with him. So yeah, I love this episode. If you aren't subscribed, please subscribe. It means the world to me. If you are listening to this on Spotify, Apple, please subscribe. If you're listening to this on or watching this on YouTube, please hit subscribe on that. Give us some questions in all of the comments. Please send this to your friends. I'm going to stop rambling on. Without further ado, Chris Adey. Mr. Chris Adey, what is cooking, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you, man?
Yeah, really good. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
Yeah, there's some on my side as well. So first one of the year.
First one of the year, like
get them all out of the way now.
Scrub off the cobwebs, literally. Obviously this isn't coming out in January. It's coming out later on in the year. So I don't really want to talk too much about Happy New Year and everything like that because
of course
my timing is awful on these podcasts and
I
have to bank them up in the background. Yeah, just realise there's like Christmas presents in the background as well. Fuck's sake, Will. How was your time though? How was Christmas? How was New Year? How was
amazing, man. Everything's really good. Had a really nice kind of relaxing time. There was no shows or anything over the Christmas period. I had managed to get all of my like radio shows pre-recorded and all done and out of the way, so that was great. And just caught up with some sleep, man, which was, you know, when you hit my age, it's so important.
Dude, it's so weird, this whole sleep game, isn't it? It's like, I don't know if you'd like listen to any podcasts or anything like that, but there's like that Chris Nestor, I think his name is,
right?
And he's like this sleep guru, and
okay,
it's the most depressing podcast to ever listen because he pretty much just tells you if you don't sleep, you're fucked, and like you're gonna die of like Alzheimer's really young, and oh mate, it's really scary, like what you do, what happens when you don't sleep. And like our job is one of the only jobs where we just don't sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nighttime game.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird how we like put our like I was looking at my sleep schedule this weekend, just gone, and it's like, oh, an hour and a half sleep last night. Great.
It's like, crazy, man. Yeah, we do put ourselves through it. Last October, I did Vegas and Texas in the same weekend. Mm-hmm. And I would hate to see, and then flew back, like I left London on Friday and was back on Monday morning.
Yeah.
I would have hated to have looked at my sleep schedule at that point. I think I saw a hotel room for maximum 3 hours in each place.
It's great. I love it. I don't know. Do you enjoy it?
The traveling and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I just don't like it when, you know, flights get delayed and you end up sitting in Vegas airport. Yeah. For 12 hours.
Oh, Vegas airport is to be there that long.
That's not the best one. Yeah, it's not the best one to be. The selections for food and stuff isn't the greatest.
I wish every airport was like Heathrow Terminal 5.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the best.
Definitely. Absolutely. We definitely broke the ground as far as airports go with Terminal 5.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. I don't know how they do that. JFK is not JFK. LaGuardia in New York is getting way better. They've upped their game a little bit there. But, wow, this is sad that we're talking about how good airports are.
Welcome to the lives of traveling and eating on the road and not sleeping very much.
Do you manage like what you eat or anything like that when you're flying, traveling? Are you like interested?
I try to.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's really important just to try and keep as healthy as possible with this traveling stuff.
Yeah.
I do find it hard though. I don't know if you feel the same, but there's so many times when I feel like I get myself into the perfect kind of regime at home when I'm not kind of traveling and stuff. And then you end up going out and just taking the easiest, you know, possible meal that you can, because your time constraints just don't allow you to, you know, make yourself something nice and nutritious. And a lot of the places that we end up traveling to don't really have facilities to keep up, you know, keep up with the with the healthy eating and stuff. It's definitely something I'm very conscious of.
Do you train much?
I have to start again, but I did. Yeah, I kind of fell off in like October last year.
Yeah.
The whole training was leading up to the Ibiza season. And then once that came and went, it was kind of like, okay, cool. And then before you know it, it's December and you're eating the whole way through December.
Yeah.
And then, I'd started again on 1st of Jan. So,
nice, man. Nice. It's always a good
cold
feeling.
Water swimming yesterday morning as well, which was horrendous.
I actually did it as well yesterday. Wow. I did cold water plunge for literally 30 seconds and got the fuck out. I was like, nah.
Yeah, I didn't even get a length in on there because I live near Parliament Hill, so there's an outdoor pool there. So I took myself into the shallow end, and then I think I got up to my chest, and then my heart just went, not today, mate, and I had to turn around.
That's so good.
But at least it was 30 seconds, and my legs had like the best day they've ever had for months.
You got to start somewhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love absolutely. That. I love that. You do a lot of things. So you go Left Wing Cody, obviously one part of Left Wing Cody. Kiss FM, you have a show on Kiss FM, and your A&R at Spinning Records.
Yes.
How the fuck do you do all of that?
Busy. time management is definitely one of the things I've had to learn over the last year.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't adverse to the kind of A&R role before, but this is now full time. Mm. You know, me and John run Lost Records for about 10 years.
Yeah.
But it was on a very, you know, DIY independent basis. But now this is my 9-to-5 basically working at Spinning. Everything just kind of gets juggled around that, to be honest. And you know, the Kiss shows, they tend to be pre-records, so I find time to do that in the evenings. Just try and do as many DJ shows as possible. And the guys at Spinning are really understanding about that. I think they kind of see it as an extension to the A&R role, you know, because I'm out there and I'm amongst all the artists and able to have chats with them about, you know, signing new music and stuff like that. So as I said, you know, earlier, that the time that I had off was very important for me to catch up on sleep, because it has been like a crazy 12 months. Yeah. I think like in this role, I feel like I've gone out more than I ever did when I was TJing as well, just because I was, you know, so many meetings and just, you know, sometimes three people are all in the same club. So it's worth just heading down and catching up with all three of them at the same time. And yeah, it's definitely kind of the time management is a big thing at the moment for sure.
Yeah, man, I can imagine. So for people that are listening that kind of aren't aware of what an A&R role does, can you kind of like give us like a one-stop shop kind of description of what an A&R does, especially as your role of it spinning, and also we'll get into why you went into spinning and where you got to that.
After. Sure. I think the easiest way to sum up the A&R role would be as a talent scout. I think that's the kind of easiest layman's terms to put it into. Basically finding, you know, amazing new talent and new records to go out across the many labels that I look after at Spinning. We get sent, you know, you can imagine Spinning's like one of the biggest dance labels.
Yeah.
And there's so much stuff comes through the demo emails and stuff as well. So we're basically filtering and trying to find the next big artists and also try and my job at the moment is because I'm UK A&R is to try and get more UK talent onto the label as well. I think they've been very European and American facing over the last kind of few years. So that's basically what my role is.
And how have you found doing that over the last year? Because I think I caught up with you ADE, not this year, the year before, 22, when you were just taking on the role.
I was just starting, that's right.
You were with Mr. John Bird.
John Bird. John Bird and Matt Guy.
Oh, legends.
Trying to keep up with them.
Yeah, good luck with that, mate. Good luck with anyone keeping up with John.
That was when I started to realise I needed more sleep.
Oh, I love that guy. So I guess realistically, what I'd like to get into is from being an artist and being very like forward facing as an artist with you guys and the kind of the transition of going, okay, actually my life, where I'm at in my life right now, I want to kind of transition more into the A&R role. And I think it's like really interesting because I was thinking about this when I was making my smoothie this morning, how like we all get older in this industry, right? And we all kind of have different responsibilities and things like that. And
absolutely,
things change in life generally, and we see artists turn into agents, turn into managers, turn into A&Rs, turn into other things. And I kind of would like really like to dig into like, just so people can understand that they don't just have to be an artist in this industry.
Sure.
And I think it's really important that there's so much, there's so many opportunities in the music industry to take you into the industry, and you don't have to be the artist. So I kind of want to get into why the transition, really.
Yeah. So it was around early 2022. I'd started to realize that there wasn't enough kind of shows coming in, live shows, which is what our bread and butter was, you know. There just wasn't enough of those coming in to be able to sustain, you know, the kids.
Yeah.
Me and John both got families. It was kind of like a little bit of a wake up time as I need to find something else to do. But I wanted to do some. I wanted to stay in the industry that I'd been involved in with, you know, 15 plus years. Yeah. So, I just got in contact with someone that I knew at Musical Freedom, who we were signed to. I just completely just hit him up out of the blue saying, look, mate, I'm trying to future-proof myself a little bit. Do you know of any kind of jobs that are going in the industry? I mean, I was willing to do, you know, anything. I think running like a label, I'd learned how to do promo and DJ mail out and all that kind of, all the stuff that goes around having a label and doing a DIY. I felt like I had some skills that I could maybe add in the background as not, you know, not being, as you said, the forefront or the artist.
Yeah.
And he rang me up straight away and he was like, is this for you or for someone else? And I was like, well, it's for me, really. And he was like, well, I'll let you in into a secret. I'm actually leaving, so I think you might be the perfect replacement.
Oh, really?
And it was just something like that. Just, I mean, I'd only ever spoken to Peter about the Left Wing Cody project, and he was our A&R at Musical Freedom, and I'd only ever sent him music. It was the first time I'd ever really spoken to him about anything else outside of that.
Yeah.
And the fact he rang me up straight away and he's like, I'm leaving and you'd be my perfect replacement. I was pretty like, oh, lucky in a way. That's but sick. Also, you know, yeah, in it just being a part of the industry and just having so many contacts and stuff like that, I think it really helped me be pushed forward for the job. He said, look, I can't guarantee you anything. I'll put you forward for it.
Yeah.
And then I'll let you kind of go through the interview process and everything. And I did do all of that. And I got down to the last two originally and then didn't get the job. And that was back in July 22.
Yeah.
And then September 22, I got an email saying, are you still available? And I thought it was like an old email that I got stuck in someone's outbox.
Yeah.
And just hit them back and said, are you still talking about the A&R job? And they said, yeah, if you're still available, we'd like to talk to you. And I was like, okay, cool. So had another interview and they offered me the job.
Were you looking elsewhere at the time?
No, not really. I kind of put all my eggs in this basket with like getting to this point. And I was like, okay. And to be honest, it knocked me a little bit. It's a little bit of a confidence thing.
Of course.
I was like, all right, okay. So I just started to look for any kind of admin job or anything that I could do that wasn't necessarily within the music industry. You know, I just, yeah, it was one of those things that, you know, what it's like, rejection, you have to get a thick skin in this industry, whether or not you're sending demos or whatever, you know. But yeah, I was really chuffed that they came back. And I originally started just as part-time.
Yeah.
And that was in November 22 I started.
Okay.
And then in February of 23 they offered it to me full time.
Amazing.
So I was like, yeah, definitely I'll do that. I was really happy with the role, and it's one of those things where I still to this day get up every morning and I can't wait to get to work.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I've just always had in my head, because before the music kind of really took off and it became a career, he just hated getting up and going to work and doing dead-end jobs for no reason. And I always had it in my head, you know, these jobs are just for a means to an end. Eventually I will make it in the music industry at some point. And I just never ever wanted to wake up and feel like, what am I doing? And this has been an incredible experience so far. And I'm overjoyed with the position, and long may it continue.
That's dope, man. That's really interesting. And talking about rejection, now you're the person rejecting everybody.
I know. Oh God, I still have to kind of toy with that in my head a little bit every now and then when I'm writing an email back and I'm going, oh geez, just don't give up. I always end with, you know, please send me more as and when they're finished. So
I think
not everything's going to be right, you know.
No, and I think it's the biggest lesson that I learned. I don't know about you guys when you started out as Left Wing Cody, but it's like the biggest thing that I learned is that you're going to hear way more no's than you do yeses. And I don't know if there's anything else in life that you kind of really, that really sets you up for that. I think, I guess going and applying for jobs is like kind of like a non-musician, a music industry person. I guess that is the only thing, but I never really experienced that just because I didn't really ever do any normal jobs. But it's like, I think it is the biggest lesson for me is learn to take rejection.
Absolutely, man. I think thick skin is imperative. And one thing that I had to learn very quickly and very early on is that it's not personal.
Yeah.
You know, none of it's personal. No one is judging you or your character or anything like that. It is just a case of, there is a business model or there is a sound that this label does.
Yeah.
And you just don't fit it right now. Yeah. You know, we had so many records rejected by labels that we wanted to go on so badly. And eventually we hit the right record because we just kept sending it over and over and over again. We would send demos, send new stuff. And eventually we got there, you know?
Yeah.
So not taking things personally, I think is key. And it can be hard, man, you know, especially with you've created something that is a part of you and you're putting it out there almost to be judged, you know, and it's like when you don't get the reaction that you're expecting, it's a bit of a bitter pill to swallow. But yeah, I mean, that would be the one bit of advice I would say is it's not personal. Don't take it on board and just keep knocking on the doors. You know, it's persistence is key, and just making sure that you know, you have the quality as well.
Yeah.
But you know, at some point it'll pay off.
Yeah, I agree. I think also timing's really interesting. I don't know if you like, and it's purely timing on who's listening and where they're listening and environment of what they're listening. Don't know about you, but like, I've had demos sent to me and I'm like, oh yeah, it's not that great. And then heard it in a different environment and been like, what's that record? And they're like, or had it to me where like, I remember like my old Dirty Bird days, I sent a record to Barclay. He was like, no, I don't like it. Played it and he was there and he was like, what is this record? Send it
what
to me.
This?
I'm like, mate, I sent this to you a year ago and you turned it down.
Yes, what? That has definitely happened before.
What is your, like, as an A&R, what is your, like, listening process? Because that actually, like, it's kind of, like, sparked something in my head. Is like, how are you listening to them? Because we're I have a record label, you have a record label, also you have, you're working as an A&R. But, like,
yeah,
a lot of the time I'm listening to demos and it's literally, like, you're listening in your studio or you're listening on your headphones on the go, and you're not really getting the concept of what this record's written for, if that makes sense.
Like the club environment,
like the club
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, like, yeah, how are you kind of doing that?
It definitely has to sound like something I've never heard before. Mm. As soon as I hear that part of a song, I know I'm onto something, because if it'll work in headphones, then it'll definitely work on a bigger system.
Yeah.
And also, as far as demos go, something that I always believed in was making sure that you get your point across very quickly, because with a demo or sending stuff to labels, you know, A&Rs only have a certain amount of time in a day to get through stuff.
Yeah.
So if you can get your idea across in like a minute, 30, 2 minutes, then that's what an A&R is listening for.
Mm.
And if you can get that point, then, you know, me personally and the team that I work with will then go back to the artist and go, this idea sounds great. Let's, you know, embellish it a little bit more. You know, don't worry about doing intros and outros and stuff like that when you're creating demos.
Interesting.
Just get your point across. Just get the real kind of meat and bones of the track to us so that we can hear exactly what this record's all about.
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, because everything else around it, just, you know, intros and outros, that's for DJs and that's cool. You know, you're not going to be able to tell the story of your music through those points of a track.
So it's been in you guys literally... And this isn't me sounding derogatory or anything like that or condescending, but are you guys literally, do you want to hear almost the Spotify edit, the initial...
Absolutely.
Like, no, this isn't for a DJ, this is purely for Spotify concept or streaming.
We normally will just listen to... we'll get the demos that come in will be of, like, less than 3 minutes. And then we'll go back and say, okay, let's get an extended done. If we're going to sign the record.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of back and forth and stuff as far as the meat of the track goes, because if you hear something and there's still tweaks that you need to do and stuff, we'll do that with the artists as well. But, I mean, it is, you know, that is the most important part of any record. And I think, like, you know, even me and John, when we're making music now as well, I think something that we always had done previously was, you know, make sure we get the drop right, and then like 30 seconds of a break and then the drop, and once you know that works, everything else just gets built around that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, carry that ethos into listening to demos now as well, because it's important just to get those parts of the track right. when you're talking about like songs and stuff, that's totally different. I'm talking about club records, but you know, obviously you want to hear a song structure, so you're listening to at least a verse and a chorus.
Yeah, I guess when did that change for you though? Because or did it, was it always like that? Because I guess for me is like before the streaming kind of period happened, we all listened to like the first a minute and a half of fucking mixing intro and outro. Like, did that, was that something that spinning, when you went into spinning, they were like, this is how we do it? Or is that just this like something that you learn in your own kind of way?
For me, it was just something that I was just doing anyway. Okay, because just the amount of time and stuff, I've been going back to vinyl days.
Yeah.
I remember I had this this question on a panel I sat on it recently. And, you know, back when we were buying records, you'd get a stack of like 20 records. And yeah, then there's four turntables in the record shop and a queue of people. So the guys behind the desk are like, come on, you got to get through these. So yeah, you're literally just doing that. And then as soon as you hear something, you're going, okay, that sounds good. And then you go and you take that one. It's kind of that similar vibe for me when I listen to demos and stuff now as well. It just hooked me straight away.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, we were talking about vinyl, so it's way before the kind of Spotify era, but that definitely has changed the game a little bit, Spotify, for sure. I mean, I just noticed, even as a DJ doing a radio show, for like, in 4 years, I've noticed the length of tracks, how drastically they've changed. Yeah, when, you know, I'm getting an extended mix and it's 3:14.
Yep.
going back to the like the PRs and going, can I get an extended? And they were like, that is an extended. Oh wow. Okay.
It's interesting, so that as well. I think because for me is like on All We Have Is Now, my label, like I'm signing younger artists that like haven't been in it for that long. And I'm finding exactly the same thing. Is they're sending me like club versions that are like 4 minutes. And I'm like, I have to kind of hold back and like not question it.
Sure.
Because it's them. It's them being artists and them doing what they want to do. And I think that's the beautiful thing. But it's also like, I need to take the old man out of me and go, well, this doesn't feel right.
Trust me, I've had to do that so many occasions. Just like, come on. Just don't show your age.
Yeah, literally. We're not even that old. Which that's the crazy thing.
Which is kind of hard, you know, with the old grey beard and stuff.
True.
But it's also, I think, just the next generation, isn't it? It's the attention spans and how they, you know, consume.
Yeah, I think music. I think also for me, even when, like, when I write for somebody else or I'm like giving feedback for somebody else as well, it's almost realistically now, it's like I've changed how I write music. And I always wrote the breakdown and then the drop and then filled it out. But for me, it's like, how do we write the most interesting 3.5 minute record? Mm-hmm. Or 3 minute record, and even can we make that even shorter? Because I know I can go and make an extended version for DJs. I'm not worried about that side of it. But again, when I'm writing music or when I'm engineering for somebody or producing for somebody in the studio, I'm like, how can we make that 2.5, 3, 3.5 minute record so interesting and so that there's ear candy in every section, so that the algorithm's gonna keep people listening, people are going to keep listening. But the thing is, and I'd like to get your concept, your thoughts on this, is that when commerce takes over art?
Potentially. I think the art still needs to be there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
That's always going to shine through. I think, you know, I'm always very conscious of the music that I'm signing is about the artistry and the concept than about an algorithm. I think once, if we start to be a slave to the algorithm that much, then everyone's in trouble.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's the music business as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's a business, and the consumers are now consuming music in a way different way they were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And you have to basically just give the people what they want almost, you know, because they're the ones that are demanding it. So if the data shows that, you know, people are only listening to music for 2 minutes, then, you know, make a 2 minute record that fits with that kind of listening pattern. Otherwise, where does the audience come from? You know, they're just going to stop listening because it's not of that certain amount of time. It's such a transitioning part of the music industry at the moment, just seeing how different artists that are developing and really hitting the ground running, like, for example, Kenya Grace, who just had this amazing track and basically built her own audience off of, I believe it was TikTok that she came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was such a huge, huge record.
Which one were we talking about? Strangers.
Strangers, yeah that no one really expected, you know. Mm. And it was created by her and her audience. That hype just ran with itself because there was a hunger, there was a desire from it, from the audience, you know? It's fan bases have always been a major part of being an artist, right? But now I think there's so much more room for people to create their own fan bases outside of the traditional ways, that can really kind of accelerate a career. But again, the music still has to be right, and it's, you know, it still has to be creative, which I think Kenya's stuff is.
I think that's a really interesting concept, and it goes on to, without being disrespectful to record labels, I know you work with a record label and have a record label, and so do I, and I work with record labels as well. But in this day and age, maybe not necessarily for our age group, because I think we come from a different time of where we don't rely on record labels, but record labels were like a big part of our industry.
Sure.
But I think the newer generation, is a record label even needed?
Mm-hmm. I mean, before I started working for a record label, I mean, definitely a question that I would have had even like 2 or 3 years ago. What is the point of having someone take your art and then, you know, make money out of it? I think what it comes down to a lot is the infrastructure.
Yeah.
These are still, you know, labels still have an amazing infrastructure as far as distribution goes and contacts and things that you might not necessarily be able to do on your own. And also, you know, just years of insight.
Yeah.
The people that I've been working with over the last year are just incredible minds that have been involved in music in some way, shape or form. Some for 20 years, some for 10 years, some for like 3, but are all having like we're all having these moments where the collaboration on ideas and stuff like that really then leads to something else, which in turn helps the artist that's signing to the label.
Yeah.
So it's having also that kind of like intelligence within a record label and stuff like that. Might not be the same across all labels. Mm. That's just from a spinning perspective. That's the way I see that. The benefits of having a label is having those type of people work there, and also infrastructure and contacts. I think there's still a good value with being with a strong record label, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And there's also what's your thoughts on like independent labels? Because obviously I like if we're talking like Spinning, Armada, Warner, mm-hmm. FFRR, they're all like kind of major, although some of them are independents, but like they're major record labels at the end of the day.
Sure.
But, well, I guess what's your thoughts on independent record labels as of like the DJ's record label? Obviously you get the association with the DJ, right? That we all kind of, that's what we needed at the beginning of our careers, right? And it still is what a lot of people need. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, let's say, for instance, I'm just using Kenya Grace, for example, okay, because it's just an easy thing. If she has a huge audience already, or if that artist has a huge audience already, like, does that go... I feel like that really helps with your negotiations as an artist, because
100%.
I think the value of your audience is what the label actually wants to buy. That they need that.
Yeah, in a certain way, I would agree.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a generational thing as well.
Yeah.
If this hot new act that is engaging with, you know, the next generation of listeners, then, yeah, that definitely gets taken into account for sure. I'm not quite sure on the whole kind of data side of things, but I'm pretty positive that there'll be some numbers crunched with regards to how many followers or, you know, what kind of a fan base size this artist has, and then the negotiation on advance and all that kind of stuff will probably, that will have an impact on how much, you know, an offer is made and stuff like that.
Yeah, because I think obviously the thing that's happening that we've all kind of heard everyone moan about over the years is just the absolute awful record deals that majors offer, right? and I think I'm really actually interested in seeing what happens over the next few years. Like, I've recently done a deal and I didn't really understand the accounting side of things behind it, which is what made some deals really bad, if you know what I mean. They need to recoup, obviously.
Sure.
But there's also some really terrible deals out there from a lot of record labels. And I'm really interested to see if that actually changes with these new acts coming through with huge audiences that can actually go and demand, like, actually, you know what, like, I don't need... I'm bringing a level of value that you can't even give anyone. So here's how we work together. We both want to win. Let's do a 50-50 deal. Let's do something like
that.
I'm really interested to see, is that something that you guys look at as well at Spinning, or is that something that just at this moment in time you still can't?
I think it's definitely the way that we are trying to operate now is more about longer term stuff. The feedback that we've been getting from DSPs, radio and stuff like that is that they want to see like a commitment to an artist. They also want to see the artist commit to the label as well, because then together, jointly, you tell a story. And it's about having something really fun and exciting that the DSPs, you know, will then engage in, because they bring the artist is bringing a fan base, you know, and listeners to their DSPs and stuff. So it's important that they do that kind of thing. I feel like having those negotiations and stuff with regards to fan base sizes is definitely happening at a major level. Yeah. It's not something that we're doing at Spinning. I think, you know, I've been involved in those major deals previously.
Yeah.
I won't mention which label it was, but we had like a 10% breakage fee in our contract, which is like archaic because there was no physical copies of anything that we were doing. So they were just taking 10% in case any of the vinyl or CDs or tapes that didn't exist broke in transit. So it'd be interesting to see if those the major kind of labels do start to take those kind of things out and get up to speed with, you know, remunerating, is that the right word, artists for what they're actually bringing to the table. But long-term deals, I think, is definitely the way forward. We're guilty of that as a Left Wing Cody project, of still spreading ourselves across a lot of many other labels.
Yeah.
But I think that for the future, getting commitment from DSPs and radio, it's being able to show like longevity and long-term commitment, and, you know, not necessarily, I'm not talking about 5-6 years, I'm talking about, you know, 18 months to 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, because everything moves so fast in the music industry these days. I don't think anyone's willing to commit 5 or 6 years of their career anymore just to one place.
Because so much can change. Change in that time.
It's so quick now. Yeah. You know, the music industry, one example of that would be like, you know, what I noticed at Spinning was, up until maybe March or April last year, a lot of the demos we were getting in sounded like Fred again. And then Calvin releases the track I forgot her name.
Eliza Rose or Ellie Goulding?
No, Ellie Goulding.
Yeah.
And within a week, the demos that we were receiving had changed from Fred again to, you know... Calvin Harris copies.
This goes back to this goes back to what I was saying about commerce over art. And I'm a massive like consumer of Rick Rubin content, which is
okay.
Is kind of a bit silly if I'm honest, because he's so guru, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think he speaks a lot of sense though.
He speaks so much sense, and
it
kind of makes me sad. Also, I was having a conversation with a friend this weekend about the music that's being released, and I don't want to kind of sound like a miserable old man and kind
no,
of...
do it.
But for me, it's like, it is that, and it's playing... Everything feels like... Not everything, and I don't want to generalize, because there's some really fucking great art out there. But especially in our field... It feels like everything's being played very safe, purely to be sold, not to like push the boundaries. And I think it's like with, like, let's say for instance with Fred, what he did with his Fred Again project, and I really respect what he did because he pushed the boundaries.
Yeah.
But the thing is when you're in a position of where Fred Again was starting his career as an artist for a project, when you have a team that big behind you, you can do that, right? You can really do whatever the hell you want. And I'm not taking anything away. I fully respect what he's done. And I think he's been the best thing that's happened to dance music in a very long time.
Sure. It's fresh and exciting, right?
Super. But then I think what happens is there's younger artists that want that success that just then try and copy that art. And realistically... that doesn't create longevity. That creates great hits. Yeah. It creates really fast hits. But I don't know if that actually creates true art and true artist. What's your thoughts on that?
I feel like in some ways, especially like at a lower level, the pioneers always seem to, the ones that try and really break the new ground, always seem to fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
And then it's everyone else that kind of sees that trend or that some kind of different vibe that take it and run with it, and then they end up being successful. I mean, there's so many examples of that kind of over the years. One that just jumps to mind was that Domino record by Oxia. It was originally done by a French guy, I believe, it sounded like, you know, almost identical record. But he heard something and then was, I don't know whether he had a bigger platform or what at the time, but his one seemed to go a lot further. Having like longevity is definitely something that's key, and understanding the way that a career works. No one understands that, right? We didn't start knowing where we would be right now, right? So it's all kind of like trying to fumble your way through and get to where you think you want to be. And no one ever really has like anything mapped out for them. Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is right with regards to Fred having the position that he was in and the team around him obviously helped. But I still believe in like in artistry shining through.
100%.
I really still believe that if you are able to bring something different, everyone's going to have their own influences. No one's ever bringing anything brand new to the table. I mean, I think I used the Calvin Harris record, for example. Yeah. He even came out and said he was influenced by Shaq to create that record, right? So, I mean, and there was Shaq that had done something completely different to what anyone else was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And he broke down that door,
yeah,
you know, with regards to this style or this sound coming back into the limelight. And, but what people don't see behind the scenes is that Shaq has been doing stuff for, you know, 5, 10 plus years.
Yeah.
And it took that one hit for him to then break through, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But that came down to his artistry, you know, and him doing something different and not being like the cookie cutter, this sound, you know, is popping at the moment, so let me jump on it. As you said, that creates fast hits, but does it really create longevity?
Yeah. And I think I don't disagree with you at all. I completely agree. I guess that's something else that I want to get into is fast hits. I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but for me, I remember back when I was first living in Ibiza, so 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Like from 2008 to 2015, maybe, was when there was like a summer hit. Like there was one record that every DJ played, right?
Yeah.
I think for me the last one was like Camel Fat Cola. Where like
I feel
that was like a time when everyone was playing that record, from like techno DJs, house DJs, to like the very commercial DJs, etc. Radio, Spotify, it was everywhere. Whereas now it feels like records are way more like hits are way more niche, and they don't last as long. For me, in my eyes, and I could be wrong, and I want to be proved wrong, because I actually wish there was big hits again. But like, what's your thoughts on that? And do you think there's a reason why, or do you think it's just the way we are nowadays?
I can't put my finger on it, but I definitely would agree with you. There was a way of like a record breaking in our industry, for sure. There was always like that promo push for Miami and trying to get everybody's ears around something at Miami. And then if something kind of a few tracks tick the box in Miami, then you would know they would go on to potentially doing something in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And then you'd always have that one breakthrough hit, like as you mentioned, Camel Fat, you know, or
Man with the Red Face. Like, I remember when that, like, just so, the washing machine, like, all these records that just, like...
Yeah, the Tigger stuff, and absolutely. Something that you would always come back from Ibiza with, and it would just never, you know, go away. But it's interesting that we're both in the industry and neither of us can put our finger on one of those tracks over the last 5 years, which is, I believe, what Cola is now, right? Five years old.
About that.
Has it 2 years... from COVID, okay, so anyway, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's just not the what people are trying to do as artists anymore.
I guess my theory behind it is it kind of goes back to what we were saying, that it's not necessarily because fan bases have changed, because it's all gone on to social media, TikTok, or like those specific social like platforms. I feel like hits are very individual. So like, let's say for instance, like a John Summit, right? Like, when you guys are playing in your sets, obviously I'm just spitballing. I can't imagine you guys playing a John Summit record, right?
Okay.
And I can't imagine a lot of people playing a John Summit record. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to John, but they work for John.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Fisher, a lot of people don't play Fisher's records that are like bigger DJs, touring DJs. Fish plays them.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't play my records, but I play them. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened now is that DJs are now more self-promotion tools for their own music.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
And I think for me, like 98% of my sets are my own music. And I think, is that a part where like everyone has their own niche audience, where their record can be a hit in their own niche audience?
Yeah.
But then it doesn't necessarily have to be like the big thing.
It doesn't like transpire and this is something that I only realized kind of recently. That I had a bit of an epiphany when I went to go and see a live show in London last year. And as I said earlier in the podcast, you know, I've been out way more than I ever had been while I was DJing, because I was always doing shows, right? So I was only at the shows that I was playing at. Whereas now I've had so much more time to be able to go and see other artists play and stuff. And I'd had this epiphany that particular DJ was only playing his music for maybe two or three records in the space of 90 minutes. And the audience were going crazy because they were there to see that artist. So it's almost like it's become a concert now, right? Where people are your fans. They want to come and see you play the music that you make that they really like.
Yeah.
The traditional form of a DJ show isn't necessarily what DJing is anymore.
Yeah.
It's not about introducing or collecting records and having specific things that you would go out and share with other people. DJ and artists are now like kind of one and the same thing, where you are basically giving the people that have parted with their hard-earned cash exactly what they want, which is to be entertained by the music that you create. And I as I said, it was only a recent epiphany that I had, and I started to think about the shows that I do as an artist, and think about my sets and be like, well, there's about five or six Left and Cody tracks in there. Three of them might be new ones that we're trying, and three might be tried and tested, but the rest of it is all
other people.
You know, other people's music. Am I really missing a trick here that I should be, you know, maybe giving people more Left Wing Cody stuff? Because that seems to me how, you know, you keep your audience happy, right? As I said, we know that, you know, buying tickets to clubs and everything, especially in the UK, it's not cheap these days. So, you know, you need to be giving people exactly what they want.
I agree. I also think it's just a different time. Like and I learned that. I used to be, me and MK used to tour quite a lot because we used to be under the same management back in 2018. And it's the one thing that I learned from that management at that time is, especially like touring with Mark so often, is like, he'd play all of his own music, but then I'd like go and see other DJs play, and no one would be playing MK records apart from like the classics, right? But they wouldn't be playing 17, they wouldn't be playing like all the like big radio hits. He opens with like one of his biggest records, and I'm like, oh wow, this is really interesting. And the management at the time turned around and said to me, Imagine going to see Rolling Stones and they didn't play any of their hits. And I'm so like, it's fucking so true. But yeah. I think the thing that changed for me then was like, we're not actually DJs now.
Exactly.
We're not.
It's understanding that transition and how it's more about how the audience has made that kind of happen rather than us consciously making that decision of, I'm going to go out there and play my own records. You know, it's what the audience demands, and that's what we need to give them.
Yeah,
I think that's what it really comes down to, for sure.
It's really interesting to see how the industry has just like evolved in such a short amount of time. Purely based on, I truly believe it's just purely based on streaming and social media.
Absolutely, of course. Yeah, that is a massive conversation.
Because you started Left Wing Cody before social, it was Facebook, right?
I mean, we started even before it was essential to have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, we just wanted to get signed to specific labels that we like really liked and admired and thought that our music would fit best with them. And it was because we were playing music from those labels. That's why we wanted to be on them. And there was no like trying to, you know, get bookings off the back of being on a record label or anything. It was just, I mean, you could make money still back then from just releasing music, which is another thing that's changed massively, you know, where the touring becomes the main source of income.
Yeah.
So, you know, the records always became your shop window, right? It's like, this is what you could potentially hear when you come in.
I think that's also, I agree. I think that's also really interesting with a lot of what the majors and big independents like Spinning yourselves are doing. I'm not too sure how Spinning works specifically, but like a lot of record labels now are actually like spending money for records and like giving advances and things like that. And although, yes, the advances aren't necessarily as much as we'd all like, and the deals aren't necessarily as good as we would like, but I think there's a level of like having an advance for your record. For anybody that's listening that doesn't know what an advance means, it's pretty much a loan from the record label. They give you an upfront bit of cash and then they recoup that cash. Yes, if you go and Google like record label calculator, record label deal calculator, you'll see how much they're fucking you over. But
but make sure you get the breakage bit out of your contract.
Literally,
well,
yeah.
No longer required.
but I think it's actually a really interesting concept because I remember when I was starting, nobody was getting paid for deals unless you were signing like a major album deal. No one was doing single deals with majors. Nobody was doing kind of that unless you were massive, unless you were like the legends of the time. You weren't really getting that. And I think now with the likes of having a big platform, you are getting those deals. Like we all know how, like you see it and I see it behind the scenes of the industry. We all know how like certain records get bidded by multiple record labels and just get obscene amounts of money spent at them. And you know what? Like, I think it's fucking great because I think the artist is winning. Like, if an artist can get 50 to 100 grand for one single, like, I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
I'm all for it.
And that is me with my artist hat on as well. Not me with the A&R hat on trying to get the lowest amount of...
fucking us over. Literally.
The lowest advance possible and the greatest royalty rate. But yeah. No, I agree, man. I think I feel like I sit in a very different position to anyone else, like kind of within the team, because I'm also coming from an artist's point of view, and sometimes I like to put that point across sometimes and be like, look, you know, the way that we discuss and talk about artists, you know, we need to be, like just positive about, you know, having people involved and stuff. And sometimes I feel like, the business side can take over.
I think in
all industries, and the artistry kind of gets left behind, but it's a case of, you know, trying to always be positive about how the artist is integral to all of this keeping going. You know, if people stop making music, then it's done.
No, I totally agree. And I think for me, on kind of counter to that, is also what I'm trying to do is build, is to kind of talk about the relationships between record labels and artists now. And actually, like, for years and years and years, everyone's always been screwed over by record labels, and there's always been this disconnect between artists and record labels. And I truly think is, if we can bridge that gap and allow artists and record labels to kind of think kind of on the same wavelength of each other, people win double fold, and everyone wins in a better concept. Like, record labels have a better business, artists have better records, that or have their records do better work, because I think it's also coming from an artist, and I'm sure you can kind of vouch for this as well, it's very easy to like go into a record label deal with a label and automatically have that like they're gonna fuck me over kind of concept, and like
and almost have we're that. Not winning when we come out of this meeting.
Exactly. and I recently did a deal with Amada, and I have to like step back with my management and go, actually, like, they're asking for this, let's actually like, no, let's roll with this, if you know what I mean. Let's actually like okay, yeah, this wasn't in the deal, and they're asking for something more. But you know what? Like, for me, the relationship is way more than a bit of cash. Because in the long term, these guys own my records for the next however long. And I want those records to be successful. So if they want me
you
to...
You need them to be behind it.
Exactly. Exactly, because it's so easy as an artist to go in and go, well, you haven't done this, you haven't done that, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And there's like, there's no shoulds or shouldn'ts. They now own the record.
No, that's right.
They don't have to do
that's
anything.
Right. Yeah, it's true. You know, having good relationships with... I think it's always good just to be positive with everybody within the industry and just try not to burn, you know, any bridges and just be... Just treat a person the way that you would expect to be treated yourself, you know? I think that's definitely the key thing. I've just realised the time, mate. I'm going to have to duck out. I've got a doctor's appointment at 11:15.
That's great, man. It's amazing.
But I would love to have just talked for hours with you. And
no, it's good. Cause...
I think that's a really positive way to leave it as well, you know? It's just treat others in the industry as you wish to be treated yourself. I think that's the key thing, man.
No, I love that as well, man. And I've been told that I have to keep these a bit shorter. So it's perfect.
Oh wait, if I didn't have to shoot, I would be talking to you till midday, man. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
No, mate, thanks so much for coming on. How can people kind of get in touch with you and kind of get sending you music?
Hit me up on the socials. I'm always responding to Left Wing Cody Instagram DMs. And if you're looking for an email to send me promos to, hit me up on there and I will happily share that. Not promos. Demos. Sorry.
Also...
Including yourself, by the way. You need to send me some demos too.
All right, mate. Keep safe. Catch you soon. Big love.
Thanks very much, man. Take care.
Bye-bye. And that is a wrap. Big love to everybody for coming on and listening. Please give us some reviews. Please subscribe. Big love to Chris for coming on. I really enjoyed that conversation. It was really, really insightful. See you next time. Keep safe, people.
Pulling up to Mickey D's just for drinks? Oh yeah, that's me. Nothing extra, just perfection and a straw. Coming in hot for the coldest cups on the block. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Mix things up with any size lemonade or sweet tea for $1.49. Perfect with our classic fries. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.